Podcast where we talk about trash about the things people love to hate and hate to love, and we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt.
Sort of bungled that a little bit, didn't we?
I know.
Slightly embarrassing. We're almost 300 episodes in. We're still struggling.
That's just our authentic selves. You know, it just shows how one with the people we are.
We are not some, you know, big pharma company tech giants. No, we are flawed individuals.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sort of shocked that I've gotten you to watch like a couple of sort of horror adjacent films in a row here, I feel like, because we did Opus and now we're doing Death of the Universe. Snow White, of course, this perhaps the scariest movie of the year.
Well, I will remind people that this was on my excited for list. I saw the trailer and I really liked the trailer and I thought it seemed so fun and quirky. And so I was excited to watch this, even though it is a creature feature about a unicorn that's actually a bloodthirsty revenge monster.
Yeah, who knew unicorns? So ready to kill.
Yeah, relatable. No.
Interesting. This is a, it's like a horror comedy sort of starring Paul Rudd and Jenna Ortega as a father-daughter duo. They are driving to a like billionaire's house. Paul Rudd is the billionaire's lawyer and is angling to sort of, you know, like get into the will and get some money.
Well, he'll
and
be named like the, yeah, basically the manager.
Successor, the manager. Yeah, whatever.
Once the guy dies.
Anyways, on the way up there, they hit a unicorn with the car and put the dead unicorn in the trunk, and all kinds of problems ensue when the unicorn's parents decide that they are going to come and seek vengeance on the family that killed the unicorn. Very interesting. It's an interesting premise. I'm like, I love when a movie is so original, because like I would have never thought, like, oh, what about a movie where the unicorns are, like, bloodthirsty killers and they're chasing this, like, big tech family around their estate, like...
Compound, yeah. Yeah, no, I think... I mean, yeah. Honestly, this movie, I did not enjoy as much as I wanted.
Oh no.
I know. It just felt like they really spread that premise. They really, really stretched it. And it was probably like technically maybe 45 minutes too long. There was a lot added to it that I felt like slowed it down and took the fun out of it. Like, I didn't need all this lore. And honestly, Jenna Ortega's character was given nothing to do except pace anxiously and like,
and look at
try
tapestries.
To point out pictures. Like, yeah.
Print, get the printer up and running.
Yeah. I mean, I love the side characters. You know, I love an Eat the Rich style thing. Mm-hmm. So I think the whole cast of that family was great. Will Poulter is so good and funny.
In his little shorts,
getting more and more high as the show goes along. I honestly, their whole storyline was the best part. So Tia Leone is the mom and
Richard E. Grant is the dad. Dad.
And then Will Poulter's the son. They have a butler played by the funny guy from...
From Barry. Anthony Corrigan.
Yeah, from Barry. And so I liked all these characters. I felt like they were the more interesting ones. They like had actual character to them. Like, not that it was good, but they were understandable. Their motivations were clear, even when they were murky. And their deaths were satisfying for the most part, especially Tia Leone's. But I felt like the movie really got bogged down with Jenna Ortega as the straight man and Paul Rudd as this sort of bumbling, desperate to be liked at any cost type of figure, which makes sense. Like, right, you these people around them are just hoping for something to fall off the plate that they can get their hands on. And he says he's doing it for her. And he's just like trying to get them set for life after his wife's untimely demise, blah, blah, blah. But I do feel like the movie struggled to make them interesting for me personally.
Yeah.
The majority of it.
It is sort of odd casting because I feel like they cast the serious actors in the funnier roles and then the funnier actors in the more serious roles. So they sort of didn't get to like I thought that the rich family, like all three of them, got to do a lot of fun stuff that normally they're not necessarily doing. But I thought, yeah, Paul Rudd and Jenna Ortega were a little bit boring. I also think if you're going to do this kind of movie, like, yes, there were there were a decent number of people who got killed, but I think we wanted a bigger, like, I think you want something that's a little bit more Knives Out-y, where there's like, oh, maybe like eight bad people, you know, where like the family's bigger and there's more kids or something, like, or even like Ready or Not. I think that that's maybe a better. Yeah.
Or it's like the action needed to happen all together, yes. But it was like really spread out. Like the deaths were probably every 20 minutes. Like it would kill one of them and then they'd regroup and they'd have some sort of moment. And so it kind of added to the lack of, not realism because it's like a comedy, but like their complete like inability to problem solve became more and more frustrating because they just kept repeating the same cycle where she would warn them something would happen, they'd be like, well, it's okay. She'd warn them again, something would happen, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it took the wind out of any real shock and awe of these deaths, except by how like gruesome the deaths became. So it was sort of like, I wish that they had let it unroll like something like Jurassic Park, where it's a bloodbath, like just at once, but instead they really like paced it out in a strange way. So you get one death and then they all talk about it and then you repeat the process.
Yeah, or there just needed to be more deaths so there wasn't the gap between them, or there needed to be more sort of movement because they were all, it was basically in the same house the whole time. And so they would sort of like venture out and then venture back in and then venture back out and then venture back in. And I think that they needed to sort of, like, I don't know, maybe move to another location or something. You know, if they were like, oh, like, we got to get to the boathouse because there's a boat. And then like, okay, oof, now we're in the boat. Oh, no, now the unicorns can swim. Like, they're chasing. Yeah. Like, I think that something like that, that would have been more of like a chase kind of a thing would have been better. Because that's sort of how the Jurassic Park movies work, right? It's like they have to get from point A to point B, and it's like, oh, and surprise, you have to go through this like mine shaft and a swamp and a whatever along the way.
Yeah, because it's like, I mean, this whole movie revolves around them maybe getting to a car, and they have no other plan besides that. And then you also have these unicorns who are supposedly like smart enough to not be discovered and very wily in that they can't be captured, and yet they can't break into this house that has a literal like wide open back door covered in a tent. And so it is like they're pacing around just like waiting for them to come out, but then they kind of attack and then they pull back for no real apparent reason. Like if they were drawing them out into the woods, that would make sense, like, oh, it's a sneak attack like type thing,
or like, oh, but like instead, they like to play with their food kind of energy.
And then at the end, like, Paul Rudd is, like, running to distract them, but ends up circling right back to where they were. So I was sort of like, wait, does he just have a bad sense of direction? Or was that, like, an intentional choice? Like, so it did just feel kind of like the plot armor was all around timing. And it was just, like, they wanted these moments to escalate the people, but in neglecting the villain, in neglecting the monster and the set, it sort of just felt, it just like kept feeling more and more like tired for me.
Well, because they realize that the unicorn has sort of like magical healing properties, because Jenna Ortega's acne disappears and Paul Rudd's allergies go away when they sort of get the blood of the unicorn on them. And so then this rich family's like, oh, we're going to, you know, take the unicorn and sell it for parts, and because it all has all these healing properties and we're going to make all of this money. And while they're, you know, doing experiments and then trying to get the various pieces of this unicorn out of the house, the unicorn's parents are like, oh no, we're here to kill you. And also the unicorns are like self-healing sort of. So yeah. Even though the unicorn is dead and they're eating it and snorting its horn and whatever, like it can still be resurrected kind of at the end if the pieces are all correct.
As long as it has its horn. Yeah.
Right. So.
Yeah, I think it also got buried in the lore where it was like.
Yes.
Like there were all these moments where Jenna is piecing it together based on this singular tapestry story from the Middle Ages that she saw once. And it's like that classic, like in Twilight when she Googles, what are vampires? And yes. She finds exactly what she needs.
Yeah.
Which is like fine. But then they really tried to like stretch it out to be like, no, I know the exact pattern and there's going to be a maiden. And it's like, I don't know if we needed her to be some sort of expert on unicorns because it doesn't really make sense. But then on top of that, on top of her studies, it's also they introduce this plot that she's connected spiritually or energetically.
Yeah, because she touched the horn.
And saw time and space unfold before her, which is really just a point to get some sort of dead mom story in there when things go awry. And so I just felt like we didn't need all that. Like we didn't need to see the universe through the unicorn.
Well,
I don't know. Like it just started to feel like, okay, we have lost anything that made this fun in our attempt to make it somehow thoughtful. Like I don't know.
I did think that the movie was a lot of fun. I had a good time watching it, but I did think there was a lot of lore of like, oh actually, if you look at the tapestries, you have to catch the unicorn, but then the unicorns let go when the maiden comes and whatever. And it was like, one, these aren't things that are stereotypically known about unicorns. It's not like in Twilight where they're sort of like vampires and we all know what vampires are.
Yeah.
And yes, the Cullens are like slightly different, but for the most part they're like normal vampires.
Right.
This is like, oh, we all know what unicorns are. These are actually nothing like the unicorn that you've ever seen. They're not even white for most of the movie. They're like, they're black and they're angry and like they're gonna Shetland kill ponies. People they got these giant horns, they're ripping people apart, and then all of this, like she's just looking at these tapestries and osmosing weird kind of traits about what these unicorns either want to do or don't want to do. I feel like, again, sort of with the sort of like I was talking about last week with Snow White, like I think that this movie had the potential to be more like How to Train Your Dragon-y kind of energy, where it's like, oh, like nobody else understands them, but I understand the unicorns. Right. Like, and so then she has this connection and she's like, no, we shouldn't kill them because of animal rights. And it's like, that's such a straightforward plot. And then you just have the bad people doing more bad things and the unicorns killing them in more interesting ways. Like, you didn't need a lot of this plot. You could have had a tight 90 minutes where these unicorns are just killing bad people.
Yeah.
And instead, because
it's like, I don't want to agree with the billionaires in that she's bad at presenting an argument, but she is truly terrible at presenting a theory or a solution. She's just like shaking and being like, but the tapestries. And I feel like if they let her be like a stoner who's cried wolf too many times or is just like looks like she's off her rocker, but she's trying desperately to prove like, no, this isn't the weed talking, like this is real, bro. And like allowed it to have some fun and sort of like, I'm just reacting to the facts here instead of making her some sort of sudden expert on unicorn psychology. Because then there's like this whole thing about like the the lights in the sky that I was like, what is this? She's like looking at it and she's like, oh no. And it's like revelation for her, but it doesn't tell us anything. So it just like in trying to set her up as some sort of like all-knowing maiden, it kind of destroyed the interesting fun part of realizing how unhinged these unicorns are to our idea of them. Like I think that could have been, you could have just had a silly, what the fuck is this unicorn doing, instead of like I understand them type thing.
And not to completely derail us, but I spent about half the movie trying to figure out what this, like, cloak, cape, hoodie thing was that she was wearing. Yeah. Jenna Ortega has on, like, this red thing that sort of looks like Red Riding Hood's cape, but then also looks like a hoodie. And I was like, I've never seen this article of clothing before. Like, where did this come from? What is this? She's sort of wearing it differently in different scenes. And I think she's supposed to kind of be, like, like a little bit of like a loner emo kid kind of. But I was like, I don't understand how this hoodie necessarily, this like weird cloak thing fits into this. I mean,
it kind of like mirrored the tapestry of the maiden and the red dress. And so I was like, oh, this is going to come up as like, you know, she's going to realize she's living the parallel to it. But they never really get that. They don't commit to that visual in a way that's interesting. So it is sort of just like a weird costume choice she loses halfway through the film.
I think to talk about Jenna Ortega a bit as an actress, she's sort of a fascinating one because I feel like her main breakout roles have all been sort of similar-ish, I guess. It's like she was in Wednesday where she's, you know, very like sarcastic, and then she's also in X, the horror movie. She's been in Scream. She was in Beetlejuice this summer. She's like always kind of these like Aubrey Plaza-esque person, but like less,
like straight,
yeah, but like less energy, like very like, yeah, what's the word for it, like just very like monotone kind of sarcastic energy. And I think that that has worked in all of those projects, but I feel like I haven't really seen her in something where she's not sort of playing that character. And in this, she is again playing that same kind of character, but rather than be the one who, like, rather than sort of being the oddball in that, oh, she's the one outside the group because she's, like, kind of weird, she is the voice of reason. And I feel like that doesn't really work well with this type of character. So I was intrigued, sort of like, I can see why they cast her, because obviously she's famous. And like, if you're looking for somebody in this age range who sort of is doing these types of weird sci-fi horror movies, like, she is probably the number one get. But I felt like it wasn't, I think in other movies that are sort of like this, you either get somebody who's really sweet in this role as like the nice person who's like, wait, why are all these people bad and killing animals? I just want to protect the animals. Or you get somebody who's more like take charge kind of energy. And she's just sort of there, like monotone, saying things, but not like really commanding a presence. I felt like it was an odd casting choice, or maybe an odd performance from her that didn't really work in this movie, even though it sort of mirrors other stuff she's done.
Yeah. Well, this was written and directed by Alex Sharfman, who is a producer, this is his first feature film. This is his first directorial. And he kind of had an in with Paul Rudd to begin with. I don't remember why, something else he wrote that didn't go anywhere, but was maybe attached to him originally. So he kind of wrote this with Paul Rudd in mind. They got her before she, like they said, they cast her on the day that Wednesday premiered. So it was sort of like before she became more expensive than this film would allow. And it is kind of interesting to think, like, you know, we've talked about this with Opus, we talked about this with a lot of movies, where who gets to take a swing and how much oversight is there on said swing. And this felt like, it's like a clever premise, right? Like, it captured me. The trailer was fun, the whole cast is fun, the idea is fun. But I just feel like this could have been sharpened by someone who has maybe written a script before, instead of just, you know, studied cinema through his production history. And so, yeah, I don't know. It's kind of interesting that it's like another white dude who just wanted to try. And so he got to cut his teeth on an A24 back to film, which is an indie project. You know, it's not like it was $15 million budget. So it's not that big, but it is a theatrical release. It is like, you know, Paul Rudd vehicle. So I don't know. I just felt like it was weak in a way that maybe some people aren't allowed to be as weak in and still get a success story.
Well, it's interesting because I feel like the types of movies that we hear, oh, you don't make this movie anymore. It's like these sort of mid-budget, more unique viewpoints. Yeah. And I feel like we've had a couple of these this year that have been the type of movie that we don't get to see that often and from younger directors, but then haven't quite landed well. And it's like, it seems like you would have had to have had a stronger script going into this, because if it's a first time director, they would have wanted to know, you know, it's not like you're Martin Scorsese and you can just sort of say, yeah, it's about unicorns and a whatever. And they're like, okay, sure. Yeah. Like, you're Martin Scorsese, we'll let you make it. So yeah, the fact that both this and Opus sort of seemed a little half baked, I think is interesting. Because they, and both of those movies, I think, could have been a lot better with just a couple of tweaks. Like, I think the premises of both of those are good, and the casting is good, and there's a lot of good pieces in it. It just didn't quite, the script didn't quite land.
Yeah, and it's interesting because we like things like Ready or Not or Invisible Man or Get Out. Like, these are movies that had sort of like no real respect to them. Like, it wasn't like they were the most looked forward to or anything like that, but they ended up being so good. And so I wonder if it's like an issue where studios are just trying to green light more to see what sticks, or if it is just like a bros club where, oh, I want to make a movie, like, let's see what we can do with 15 million type thing. I don't know. It's just fascinating because, yeah, this movie isn't great, and it's in fact kind of like bad if you think about it, in my opinion. Like, yes, you can have fun, but it's not like Ready or Not had a very clear message. Invisible Man had a very clear perspective. Like, and we can be against like messaging in horror films and every horror film having to have a story, like a larger theme, but like Knives Out, all these movies that have played with this idea of wealth as a corruptor, this just didn't feel like it was adding anything or even saying anything worth the I don't know, the strappings of it. Like yes, it's saying like, wow, these billionaires are kind of soulless and down to do whatever and they get their comeuppance, but it's not really giving anything aside from caricature and kind of easy slapstick jokes. Like, I don't know, like it would have, there was room for it to be compelling, like for them to have real interest, play undertones, like, you know, like in Ready or Not, when you have this cast of characters, or Knives Out, where there's this like very specific characters at play. But these are just like, okay, yeah, it's the drugged out son who doesn't know what he's doing. It's the mom who's like hiding behind these, you know, nonprofits saying she's doing so much good for the world. And it's a dad who's so addicted to money, he literally can't be killed. And I just think if they'd focused in on something, if they'd made something more specific, it could have been more interesting and more fun. And that would have tightened the script and it would have made the film run more smoothly. So I'm wondering, where are people just getting the green light? And why isn't anyone asking like, okay, well, what are you trying to say here? Like, what are you trying to accomplish?
I mean, I think that this was sort of a like anti-big pharma, anti, or like pro-animal rights. Like, there was sort of a general viewpoint on what it was trying to do, but it wasn't very specific. And then the fact that it's about unicorns, which aren't real, I think also makes it less specified. I can see why this was made, because I do think there is a lot of fun. There are a lot of fun elements here. I wonder if this is something where, like, it got a couple of notes from somebody. And so then they were trying to like add, you know, if some like executive was like, well, maybe we need a little bit more backstory on this. So then they tried to add it. And they're like, well, maybe we need a little bit more of this. And so then you kind of end up with like a Frankenstein-y thing. And I think that where long-term directors sometimes get into issues with them standing by their own ideas too strongly and not taking advice from other people, sometimes first-time directors can have the opposite issue where it's like they kind of have to take advice from everybody. So if you get a couple of studio execs who sort of have a weird take on something, you end up with a sort of wonky movie. So I wonder if it was something in that regard. But okay, I loved the kill scenes. I feel like there were so many great... When the one woman got ripped in half out by the gate, great. Tia Leone getting like... like
that was brutal. That was
on the pool table. So fun. I loved the scene where the horn just comes through and kills what's his face. Like I think that the kill scenes worked so well. I just wanted more of them. Like, I needed the family to have like three more kids who got axed some way or another.
Well, yeah. And I mean, I think, again, that was the most fun part of the story, is watching Will Poulter descend into this sort of I'll do it for the family. Like, he takes it too far. He lets his mom get slaughtered on the table because he has this idea. But that doesn't go anywhere, right? Because he's not actually smart. But even that isn't really played up. And so, yeah, I do feel like their deaths were good, but they kind of felt, they felt like deaths that would, except for Tia Leone, they felt like deaths that would happen to B-list like castmates, and that these should have been bigger in some ways.
Yes.
And yeah, I think it's like, I mean, yeah, I'm going to always circle back to Will Poulter because he understood the assignment. Like, he really channeled that sort of self-important billionaire kid who can't find a shtick but thinks that's okay because he's just good at everything or whatever, or is protected by his mommy and daddy. And so I almost wish that this movie had been more around children of billionaires. Like, there could have been something fun there about putting this cast of Succession in front of these monsters and like seeing them try to weasel their way out, because that was the only fun part of the second half of the film, is watching him do more and more antics around getting these unicorn superpowers. You know, he starts taking shots of the blood, he starts snorting the horn powder. Like, it was unhinged, and I wanted more of that, because that was the funny bit. And watching his mom realize like how dumb he was, it was funny. Like, I really liked that piece of it.
The family was great. Like, I think you could have almost had a movie Nix, Paul Rudd, and Jenna Ortega all together. And just have it be like this group of rich people
staff
come across the unicorn they're trying to do with it, and the unicorns actually kill everybody. So it's like the end of the movie, the only characters that are left are the unicorns, because 12 people have been murdered. And you have, and it's like a bodies type group of people where it's all of these sort of privileged like rich kids. And I think there was definitely some fun stuff here. I think that this movie didn't do well enough to get a sequel made of it, but I do think like there could be fun things to do with this if they had one. But alas, I think the ship has sailed on that front.
I mean, that's the frustrating thing about like coming across a good idea and being like, oh, if only, because I think if they'd made this sort of about the staff of the billionaires, that's a more interesting angle than this lawyer who's been schmarmy and more than willing to go along with their, you know, world domination and trying to hide it behind the name of his daughter, and then sort of like giving in at the very last minute and admitting it wasn't worth it. It's like, okay, that's not an interesting character. That's just a smarmy dude who feels a little bad now that his daughter's gonna die, even though she warned him multiple times that she wanted to go. So I feel like there could have been a more interesting dynamic that allowed the movie to play to its strengths, which is sort of the zany what the fuck is happening type of question mark around this unicorn. And we didn't need some sort of bookish young girl who's like yelling to the townspeople to understand the seriousness of the event, because it's like everyone's gonna die by the end of this movie. We all know that, so you might as well have fun playing into it.
You know what movie this reminded me of, which I think is sort of a better version of this, but and more unhinged, was that movie that the it's like, can I remember the name of it or any of the actors involved? David Harbour's movie where he plays Santa Claus, the murderous Santa Claus movie. Did you ever watch that?
I didn't. But I know you loved it. It's like, it's not Bad Santa. It's not Red Alert. It's something.
Yeah, I can't remember what it is. Yes. It's like Santa Slaughter or whatever. But where it's like this family or this little girl is sort of like being taken hostage by these horrible people. And the only person who's like in the house who can save her is Santa Claus, who turns out used to be a Viking and like is ready to kill some people. And I thought that it was similar, one, because you get the like supernatural creature that's normally a good person, like going on a rampage in a house with a bunch of rich people. But that one had a lot more fun with the kills. And especially since all the kills in that were sort of like Christmas themed, where it's like, oh, you got stabbed by a Christmas ornament, you got impaled by a Christmas light, you know, like that kind of a thing. I thought that took itself, because I feel like the first deaths of this
are really just like, the deaths are all staff and like secondary bad people, you know. So it's like the doctors who are experimenting, but it's like, you know, I think if you have more people, then you can kill off people who maybe deserve it a little bit more first, instead of feeling like, oops, there goes the cook.
Well, and it's always a little bit dicey because it's like, okay, well, these people need a job. Like, they're not billionaires. Yeah. You know, the security guard for the house, I'm sure, is not making more than $100,000
a butler,
year.
Yeah, the butler, the unsung hero of the film. He deserved to be the front man. Yeah.
Well, and he lived at the end and then came back, which was sort of random. It's like, oh, okay, yeah, I guess, like, you escaped. I forgot about that. The one thing I did enjoy was the head of security, the British woman. She's from the TV show W1A that I was obsessed with during the pandemic. So I was excited to see her have a role in something. I was like, let's give her more parts, please. Because she's so funny in the show and didn't really get to do that much in this movie. So I, was like, they just did not utilize these people well. With the exception of Will Poulter and Tay Leone and Richard E. Grant, who I think thought were all just so fun. Like, I could, again, I think if you had a movie where it was just rich people, you could have had them all be a lot more entertaining.
Yeah, it's like make Tay Leone's character want her husband dead and be like resentful of this.
Well, then you get the menu.
Yeah.
It's like, then it's the menu, and it's like, oh, those characters were all incredible. Like, I could have watched The Food Critic and Nicholas Holt taking pictures with his phone.
A fundraising event. Yeah. They're grilling meat for the whole party, everyone there to gather and praise themselves for the cost of insulin going up. Like, it's like, there could have been, something a little bit more pushing the envelope. But I don't know. There's just something kind of tiring about the, like, I'm all for a father-daughter relationship, but this just was like, you have a bad dad. Like, he's a bad dad. He's not listening to you. He's not looking out for you. He's chasing this career you didn't ask him to be a part of and trying to say it's for you. Like, that's a bad dad. Well, so I didn't, like, feel for it.
The fact that he had a kid and then there was no light in behind his eyes.
Yeah, there's no light in his eyes.
And dead. And I thought, wow, and parenting, like, bad vibes, always.
It's like, sorry your mom died like 2 to 3 years ago, but I'm going to go be the lawyer for this terrible family and drag you into it because it serves me. I mean, us. Like, it's like, okay, please. And they didn't really play into that. They just wanted me to turn against Paul Rudd. What they wanted is me to love Paul Rudd enough that I didn't notice the red flag of a father he is, but it didn't work. Like, it was like, he wasn't given enough to do. He had no backbone. There was nothing interesting for him to do except oh, like panic around his daughter.
Don't pick your pimples.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm like, the movie, I wanted it to be better than it was. I did think it was fun. It wasn't that long, but also it was just kind of nothing. Like, I'm struggling to think of what else we can even talk about with this movie, and we've only been chatting for 34 minutes. It's like,
It was pretty, like, whatever. Like, that's how I felt watching it, and I was expecting it to be something punchier, something more fun, something that would come up again, like Ready or Not for us, which came out like 7 years ago, but we still cite as a fun
supposedly
time.
There's and I don't a sequel think I'll coming ever
think about this.
Oh, really? I think I will think about this because of the kill scenes. Like, I think I'll think about the unicorns. I think every time I see a unicorn for the rest of my life, I will sort of think about this movie and that doctor getting ripped in half in the lawn. Like, that was such a funny scene.
Disgusting. But yeah, I think there could have been like one, you know, I was like, okay, all the kills start to feel the same though. I just wish it'd been more creative across the board. That's all.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yes.
I'm about to write a spec script that's just rewriting this movie because I feel like it was such a wasted, like it was almost there and they could have just spun a few elements and really.
You're like, it's a spec script. Okay, so there's this musician. He was famous in the 90s. He's inviting a bunch of people to his house and then they find a unicorn and then the unicorns start killing the people. But then there's dwarves, but they're not called dwarves. They're just weird little blob CGI creatures.
Yeah, yes. Nightmares. Yeah.
And then one of the characters is really into sauce. Cancer
kids who can't be more than 5 feet apart at any given time. That's,
oh my gosh,
that's
going
to bring us together, okay? And then an alien comes, and the aliens have some ulterior motive we will not be aware of.
No, we're not getting into captive state.
It'll be good. We can't
get into captive state, the worst movie we've ever covered on this podcast. What was it about? Nobody knows. It's like the speech where Kristen Wiig and Will Ferrell are introducing the movies for Best Actress or whatever, and they're like, it's like the Cordit. What's the Cordit? Nobody knows what the Cordit is. It's like, that was Captive State. Nobody knew what was going on. Everybody was like,
I know what's going on.
There's aliens. Right now, oh,
I haven't seen it since their first season, so.
Terrible. Okay, well,
if anyone wants to ask us questions on Shelby making a popular movie better, you can DM us and I'll make that part of our special episode, is just me pitching better versions of films that did okay.
Shelby's just writing her own questions into the thing. Yeah. Oh, so another person said, Shelby, you're so gorgeous and smart. How would you have fixed Iron Man? As the most talented? Rude. rude.
But no, please send us your questions, because I love seeing them. We'll get to them someday. I don't know when. But next week we get to talk about Hunger
Games. White Lotus.
Oh, dang it. You're right. White Lotus, then Hunger
Games. White Lotus, then Hunger Games. I haven't started the Hunger Games book yet, so I really need to chop on that.
I finished I'm ahead.
I'm taking the train down to DC to visit my brother this weekend, and I'm like, that's going to be such a fun train book.
You should say hi to Laura. She'd love to see you.
Does she want to?
She'll take you to drinks or something if you want to get lit.
I mean, I'm staying with my brother in his house where, this is insane. So my brother, is a seminary student. So he's not in seminary. Now he's just getting his PhD. But anyways, he lives in a house with, four guys. And he's lived there for a while. And the roommates just keep switching. But apparently, two of his roommates now are, crazy Trumpy conservatives. Which, sure. But they have guns in the house. I'm going to get killed.
Yeah,
they're like,
you can
here's
stay with Laura.
He's like, here's my gay brother. Don't shoot him in the night. You know, it's like, dear God.
You know what? Yeah, I'll give you Laura's number. And if you ever feel like you need out of there,
I feel unsafe. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. Okay. Great. I think I have Laura's number, but you know, good to have it. Okay. Yeah. So yes, White Lotus. And speaking of guns, White Lotus.
speaking of rewriting stories that could have been better, Hunger Games. No.
Hunger Games. Okay, wait, for White Lotus, before the episode, before the finale, did you watch this week's episode?
Yeah, I did, of course.
Who do you think is dying?
I don't know, because I want to go back and rewatch the opener, because we see the body floating, but it's no body we're familiar with, right? Like, it's like a bigger man.
I don't know. But I also feel like there was a lot of gunshots, so we could have lost a couple.
I think it will be the hotel owner trying to kill off Walter Goggins' character, and then things go awry or something.
See, I feel like it has to do with the Russian,
because they're
people
a
who
secret.
Stole the, yeah. the, robbed the gift shop.
Well, that's, yeah, that's true. That is true. And that would be funnier. So probably something.
I feel like the thing is, I could see truly anybody getting killed, which I think is maybe like, I mean, I'm sure it's the purpose and smart
casting.
So
the first one was the hotel manager, right? He died.
Yes. Yes, he died, but he was shot by Jake Lacy when he was pooping in the suitcase. And then the
second season was Tanya. So maybe it will be one of the blondes. I feel like it'll be one of
the blondes. Like it could be one of them from the Russian guy. Also, the Blackpink girl was telling her boyfriend, hey, you need to step it up. So I could see some situation where he gets involved and accidentally like kills somebody because he's not trained with the gun. Yeah. Then you have, I don't think Jason Isaacs' character is going to be killing anybody.
Yeah.
But he also is unstable and like could get somehow involved and stuff. Yeah. And then you have the Walton Goggins thing. And then I also think it's a bit of a red herring, the Natasha Rothwell and Tanya's ex-husband. I think that she's going to take that money. And dirty. Yeah, it's like, I think that she's taking that $100,000 or whatever and getting that hell out of there. But yeah, I could see one of the blondes going.
I've heard people say the German guy, but I don't think they can kill off another hotel manager, you know?
Yeah, I think that they could end up, I think we could lose like some of the Russians, and then also like Patrick Schwarzenegger, and you know, it's like, I think we could lose a couple of people in this.
Then no one would want to stay at a White Lotus again. They have to still maintain some name integrity, you know, brand loyalty. I feel like it'll be like one person dead and then a lot of maybe silly injuries. Like, I think maybe the actress dies.
I could see that. She's
got nothing else to do, you know.
Yeah.
But it could be Carrie Coons, which would be sad.
I love Carrie Coons. She's the Leslie Bibb and Parker Posey are really the stars this season, but Carrie Coons is great.
Yeah.
It has been a little bit slower, but it's like, I still love it. The writing is so good. Like just the different scenes with the people talking.
I think it's been fun. Very interesting.
Okay. White Lotus, then Hunger Games, then Shelby's gone for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
That's the schedule. But thank you everyone for listening. Don't kill any unicorns. If you hit one with a car, just leave it there. It will resurrect itself and you'll be fine. You know, maybe take a little blood, splash it on yourself and just call it a day. And send us an email, a message on Instagram, for the mailbag, and we'll be back next week. Bye.